Hi, welcome to another episode of Beerfest. And in particular, this is the second episode of our series on Brewing Without Malt. If you missed the first one, it's up there. Check it out. During it, Christian Berger, who's done a lot of research into brewing traditions and cultures around the world, he started to outline his six ways that traditions and cultures, as I said, have brewed without necessarily using malt, but using different ways of getting the sugars out of the starch. In the first section, first part of this series, we talked about saliva. We talked about malt as being one of the ways. And we talked about particular fungi that can both get out the sugars and ferment them at the same time. And that's very popular in parts of Africa and up around Bhutan, Nepal, places like that. In this second part, we'll be talking about the remaining three pathways, one of which is chemical, the other two still involve enzymes. If you missed it, like I said, the first part is really fascinating because this gives you an insight, a way into different cultures and how things people are looking at things. Because if you're coming from kind of the Western brewing, you know, what I'd say 90% of the people watching this are going to experience, it's, you know, the beers brewed that way are made from malt, hops, yeast, and water. But they don't need hops. They don't need grains. And, well, they use grains, but they don't necessarily need them, and they definitely don't need to be malted. And yeast is debatable as well because, as I said, the third method that Christian was talking about last week uses the same fungi. It's not a yeast, but it is a fungi. That both breaks down the starch and ferments it. So there's quite a lot going on there, and I think it challenges a lot of our perceptions of what beer is, where it came from, and what it can be. So that's where I'm going to leave it. I'm going to pass you over to Christian now, and he's going to start pretty much immediately on this fourth step. So let's go over to Christian and let's talk beer.
Okay. Now, the method number four. Mostly used in Africa. Okay. I don't know one occurrence of this kind of brewing method outside Africa. It has been described in Senegal, Zambia, and southern Zaire.
Okay, this looks a very complex one.
So the basic process is to use very specific plant which have the properties of hosting strong sarcifying enzyme.
Okay.
Enzyme, which kind of enzyme? They are chemically, they are quite similar to the amylase, the alpha and beta amylase we find when you make malt.
Okay.
It's quite quite the same. What kind of plant? They are listed here: Heminia, Rutherfordia. I don't have a picture of this plant, but you mainly use you find this sarcifying enzyme in the leaf, in the leaves and the roots of those plants. To prepare the plant, you if you use the not the leaf but the root, so you I don't know if it's the defibering, it's an English word. Yeah, defibering means that you it's like to peel the roots.
Okay.
Remove the outer coat. You dry them and you pound them.
Okay.
So you get a kind of powder. Then you can store them, and like the beer starters or the malt, you can keep them a long time. When you want to brew, you grind the raw grain. In Africa, that's corn, sorghum, millet. You make a brew, but this is, to answer a question, this is a liquid phase.
Okay.
So it's quite similar to the wort step of the brew, malting process.
Okay.
This is liquid. Enfin, liquid. Semi-liquid.
Right, yeah.
A kind of mash, but quite liquid. And then you soak this kind of item, so that it's the root, dried root. You put them in the mash, and you wait for no more than one day, and it works exactly like the malt. The starch is becomes liquid and sweet. That's all.
And
so here, this kind of a process is quite similar to the malting process.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked hugely complex when I first saw it there, but yeah, now you've explained it. It's pretty much the same, except that you're putting in these plants.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's
and
then you have the classical step, filtration. You cook the wort here. So here we are in a completely wort step, a sweet liquid. Of course, you have to remove the plant. You have a sterile wort, you're cooling, and you goes on with the alcoholic fermentation.
Okay.
So the main specific feature of this process is the use of this plant.
Okay. And is there any reason that anybody has kind of put forward why it's only in Africa? Are the plants that can do this only in Africa, or?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. This kind of brewing process has been described only in the year 70s. You know, not before.
Okay.
To discover this kind of brewing process, it's quite let's say an ethnologist must go on the fields, stay with people, live with people a few days to discover this kind of brewing processes. What I mean is to have such a description, technical description, only specialists on the field can do this.
Okay.
This means that it may be used in for example in South America or in Asia, but we don't know. We don't know, not because it doesn't exist, but because nobody has been interested in such a technical process.
Okay.
That's a problem.
Yeah, well, that's always, and again, even if it isn't happening today, it doesn't mean it didn't happen in the past. So, okay. No, that's a,
The number five, it's the use of the amylase from starchy foods. And the main example of this brewing method is the brewing of banana beer.
Okay.
The so-called banana beer. That this beer, this kind of beer, are brewed in an African area, which is called the Great Lakes area. That's Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi. How do they brew their beer? They accelerate the maturation of the fruit.
Okay.
The entire fruit, for example, the banana with the full banana. I mean the complete banana, the banana with the peel on the coat.
The skin on it.
Yeah,
the peel. Okay.
They put it on the fire, or in a pit, to accelerate the maturation of the fruit.
Okay.
Plantain is not the usual banana that we use as a dessert.
Right.
The plantain is a banana mostly composed with starch.
Okay.
So it's more vegetable than a fruit. Really. When the banana are mature, you extract the juice, just press the banana, the plantain, and then you make a wort, and then you goes on with a normal process, alcoholic fermentation and cooling and filtration.
Okay, so just thinking here, so you make a wort, so that point is kind of the same, but it's a banana wort. So if you're, my first thought was that this is a bit like malting, but it's not, because you're not stopping anything. You're speeding up. Could you do this without the pit? It would just take longer. You just leave the plantains there to essentially start rotting, and then
there's no, you mean it's a one step brewing method.
You
cannot stop the process here.
Exactly.
It's impossible. Of course, because when the banana, the plantain is mature, you have to quickly extract the juice. You cannot stop it. It's not like the malt. You cannot dry the banana to brew it later.
And with this, like that, they're putting it in this pit to speed up. Basically, it's rotting the thing, like maturing, as it's ripening and rotting. But if they just left it You don't need the pit. You could just wait longer, I guess, until it starts, till the juice starts to come out.
No, you don't. No, no,
No, you have to do this step.
no.
Okay, so what does that? So the heat does something to it. It changes or. I'm not sure if I'm clear here. So they're putting it in the pit, and is that just speeding up the process, a natural process, or is it making a chemical change that would not occur naturally?
It's a natural, yeah, it's a quite natural process here. The
Okay.
maturation of a plantain is completely natural, yeah.
Okay, so
What happens here is the that's what I call it. Somewhere else, I call it over rippling of the starchy fruit.
okay.
Over rippling means you accelerate the rippling of the fruit, so you use a completely natural process. If you leave, for example, if you leave the plantain on the ground, it will ripening.
Yeah, that's
It
what.
will ripen, sorry, naturally, spontaneously. Yeah. This brewing method is use only the natural process, the
Okay.
ripening of fruit. Starchy fruit. The difference is that between, I don't know, this kind of brewing method with banana and brewing, I don't know if you use, for example, I don't know, sweet fruit like grapes. The same grapes spontaneously mature.
Yeah, so it's almost the same thing.
Difference that the grape also host yeast on the fruit, so they mature and they also ferment.
So this would happen with a plantain. So this is, apart from the fact that it's starch, it's effectively like a wine. It's the wine process. And
It's quite similar. Yeah,
okay.
that's right. Right, because that's the reason why some scholars call that process, call the product not banana beer, but a
Wine.
banana wine.
Okay. Well, we have a comment here, just here, that with the way energy prices are going, it might be the way to brew all beer. It might be a cheaper way of brewing beer than our traditional method.
But I want to point out that I have the example of the banana, enfin, plantain. But this brewing method is also used to, for example, to brew carob seed.
Okay.
You know what is a carob? Carob is a tree. And it gives starchy not fruit seeds. You can also use it for to brew chestnut, to brew also Pandanus julianae in Papua. It's very interesting plant because it also produce starchy seed. Pandanus julianae belongs to the palm trees general. And in that case that's completely starch.
Okay.
You know, the seed
Yeah.
is completely starch, like the carob seed.
Okay. And are these.
So there are no it's not confusing as like the banana beer.
Okay.
Banana beer, yeah, because sometimes there are confusion between the plantain and the banana fruit.
Right.
I think that the banana beer means a beer from the banana fruit. But
yeah.
That's not the case.
Yeah, I see that now. I see that. Okay, and yeah, are they very, I guess because it's the fruit or it's the wort kumiodo that start it has a very strong flavor of that.
Oh yeah, probably. Probably because I never taste a banana beer.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry about that, but I didn't have the occasion to go to Rwanda or Burundi. Okay.
Well, that's something to look forward to. So, so then you have one other method, which I think is quite different from the others. You've classified it as it's basically external or.
Yeah.
Yeah, so number six.
Number six.
Yeah. This is the chemical. Only,
yeah, the number six is only chemical. That's quite different from the previous 5-1 brewing method. 5-1. You must know that a sour medium, for example, I don't know, water with lactic acid or acetic acid. So, which are called weak acid, not sulfuric acid, which is strong acid. So they are called also organic acid, because they are produced by the biochemical process. A sour medium can also convert starch into sugar.
Okay.
Without any enzymatic action. That's very purely chemical.
Okay.
Probably you know that the food industry annually produce a huge amount of glucose.
Yes.
This kind of method. Yeah. Most of the glucose used to sweet as sweetener or to use in the food industry is not a glucose coming from malt. It comes from a sour process.
Okay.
Because it's cheaper and so on, so on.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it, but now that you say it, yeah, it makes sense.
But the interesting point is that this brewing method is used to brew, for example, kvass in Russia.
Okay. Or
quite similar kind of beer in Central Europe.
Yeah.
Romania, countries around the Black Sea. They used to... for example, to mix bread, sour bread generally, or sourdough bread, with acidic berries, like
okay.
The blackberries, red currants, and so on. They are very acidic. So the mix. Can become sour very, very, very quickly. This is a traditional way to brew kvass beer in Russia. This is the method described here.
Okay. Yeah, because I hadn't realized that was not malted. I never thought about it. I know what it is, and I've had it, but I've never thought about how it was produced. I kind of thought it was made from malt.
So as usual, you start with the cooking of grain or roots to get a starchy paste. You cool down the paste, and this is the main, let's say, the main process. But to brew, for example, the kvass, they used sourdough bread or old bread. They make a paste with that. They keep it at not a warm temperature, but at, let's say a medium temperature in an oven, traditional oven. Let it cool down, and they only add berries or other acidifying plants.
Okay.
They add water, and they get a sour medium. A sour medium means it's a starchy sour medium.
Okay.
And you get a beer at the end. Another point. When you heard about the Berliner Weisse,
yes,
the traditional Berliner Weisse. Did you heard about that?
I did.
It was a wheat beer.
Yeah.
Made traditionally in Berlin and the area around Berlin. And it was specifically a beer with lactic acid add in here.
Okay.
It's instead of berries or they add lactic acid.
Okay.
And so the Berliner Weisse was the taste of the Berliner Weisse, the traditional Berliner Weisse. I mean the Berliner Weisse before the unification of West and East Germany.
Okay.
So in Berlin, at that time they used a kind of, it was not really traditional. It was quite industrial, but they kept with lactic acid. They kept the traditional way.
Okay, yeah, because I know they isn't Berliner Weisse usually drunk with
example of this kind of sour beer.
Okay.
And yeah, now. Brewer in Europe or in America, they use the same way.
Okay. Yeah, but I know.
If they use malt, it's not really a traditional brewing with sour medium.
Okay.
I insist on that point. Here, there's no malt.
Okay.
Only the sour medium is used to saccharify the starch. No malt, no enzyme.
Okay, that's interesting because I have to check out, because I know Skjul in Berlin claim to be the only people who brew traditional Berliner Weisse as it used to be brewed, and I don't know now I have to find out if they're using malt or not, or if they're pretending, you know, what the situation is. And so
traditionally they at the end the Berliner Weisse was brewed with a part of barley malt, raw wheat, not malted wheat, raw wheat, and lactic acid.
okay. And this is, you're saying is, so this is mainly a kind of a northern, eastern European technique.
Yeah. In Europe.
Right.
Yes, in Europe, it's For example, in Africa, recently, I have discovered that this kind of process is also used, for example, in northern Cameroon.
Okay.
But it's also used in Nigeria and probably in Sudan, in southern Sudan, and probably also in other countries.
Okay. Okay. So it's pretty widespread. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, geez, you've given us a tour de force here on these different methods. I mean, they're all relatively new to me, but I mean, the one with the fungi, I think, has to be the most interesting one to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably.
But it just shows, I mean, you know, we think of beer. And like I said at the start, like we think of beer, and if you ask anybody on the street, they'll probably tell you malted barley, hops, water, yeast. And then they might kind of roll back on the hops, and then they might roll back on the barley, but malted will always be in there unless, and it turns out the most beer in the world is brewed using a completely different method. It's staggering to think that that's the case, and people, it doesn't sink into people's heads, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like all of these, like I said, there's different cultures around them. Like if you take Bhutan or, you know, Nepal, where they have the beer ferments that they, you know, there's a whole commercial industry around and that. And do you think? I don't know. This is probably too broad a question for a simple question. But are these
just one example? In South Africa, during the apartheid, a famous industrial brewery company has made a very profitable business in brewing a traditional beer. They call it kaffir beer. That's a pejorative name, because kaffir mean slave, black people. Yeah. And you saw during the apartheid, that was the political background of that kind of name. So it was a sorghum beer. It was a brew with a traditional process, a part of malt and a part of raw sorghum. Sorghum malt and raw sorghum, but it was this kind of beer was inspired by the traditional beer of South Africa.
Okay,
and it has been industrial.
And do you think
that to answer a question? So sometimes traditional kind of beer are converted, for are not really converted, are transformed into industrial process.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I don't know like how easy it is to marry these different styles together, but you see more and more people looking, you know, more traditional beers are becoming a bit more, it's, you know, people are looking for more things like saisons and lambics, you know, spontaneous beers and that. So you could see this becoming, like some of these methods being taken up by brewers, maybe on small scales, but you could see them, you know, experimenting with these.
A good trend.
Yeah, it's a very good one. I mean,
it will maybe become the mainstream in a few years.
Well,
and we have
some of these are made in
lager. But at the present time, I didn't hear about beer brew with alternative method.
Yeah,
they have every kind of beer that in Europe and also in North America, they are still brew with a part of malt.
Yeah. Yeah,
they use different agent to flavor the beer. Even the Groot beer, is understood as the Groot itself is understood as a aromatic agent.
Yeah.
But during the Middle Age, it was maybe more than an aromatic agent.
Okay.
It was maybe like a beer starter. That's my opinion.
Okay.
It's a complicated topic, of course, because the document are quite difficult to understand.
Right.
They are written in, part of them are written in Latin, and sometimes Groot is called by the cleric fermentum.
Ah.
And fermentum can be understood as a ferment, or more generally as something used to make beer. You know, it's quite difficult to interpret the text.
Yeah, but it is an interesting thing to think about, because like I said, you know, your farmhouse beers, we've had a couple of discussions here with, you know, about saying the farmhouse beer traditions in Norway and that, you know, with Kvikes and raw ales and that, and all of that is, it's nearly all lost, because you assume that Europe, that there's documentation and everybody knows what happened, but even a few hundred years ago, most of that is lost. It's up for discussion as to what the traditions are. So, and you think the Gruets then would have been what, something like Pathway 4, where they were mixing the herbs and those amylolytic plants, or what do you think, or that it was
for Groot?
Fungi? Yeah.
if you look at the four main plants used to make the Groot.
Okay.
The Groot, it depends, I don't know, Groot, Groot. Grootum also. And these four plants are probably, they can host the kind of fungi that we talk about before, okay, concerning the brewing method number three to make a beer starter.
Okay.
You have the rose, I can't remember, the rosemary, the French name is Laidon. I can't remember the English name. The English name is, I don't know. You know, I put a lot of data on beer. I forgot my own. That's too. Anyway. There is a possibility to test if the by experiment to test if the this plant can also be used as a beer starter.
Okay. So someone is that's a challenge for someone.
Not very difficult to test, but no, it's possible. It's
okay. Possible.
I think during we are speaking about a period that's the Carolingian period for the end of that period.
Okay, so around
Between the 13th and the beginning of the 14th century.
Okay,
in an area which encompass north of France, Belgium today, east, Netherlands, and the west of Germany, western Germany. This is the place where the Groot was used mainly.
Okay.
It's possible that Groot was not only an aromatic, but
That's an interesting theory.
So
listen, I've held you here. Jeez, you've been very patient, and you must be talked out. You must be running out of very dry throat. So I'll try and finish it up for you, and not hold you for too long. Is there anything you think that we, Christian, that we didn't cover there that you think should be focused on, or what? You know, where do you think this is going? Where your research is going with this? Do you think there's more to discover? Do you think in what areas are there to discover more about?
I have also a video, Brian.
Okay.
Which show the because we have an undertaken with a friend of me, a brewer, a kind of experiment using beer starter that I have brought from Bhutan and Nepal. We just experiment this kind of brew just to check if a beer starter and let's say an old beer starter can be used let's say a few months later.
Okay. If you have that, then yeah.
Just to show, the video is quite long, but just the in the video you can see the starter itself.
Okay.
Different kind of starters. This is just to picture the thing. I mean, you see a beer starter.
Okay.
The experiment was made with millet and rice and barley.
Okay.
Voilà. That's what I want to show you. Blah, blah, blah. It's in French. There. Here, you see... This comes from it's a beer starter coming from Nepal.
Okay.
You see, that's quite different from this one.
Yeah.
This one, this is the beer starter.
That's like
which has been shown during the video in Bhutan.
Yeah.
This comes also from Nepal. You see, it's quite different. This is from rice. This is from, I can't remember, probably corn.
Okay.
Here, barley and corn also. Hop, hop, hop. to do the same.
Okay.
Reducing border. Faire défiler. So you see what a beer starter looks like.
So there are different varieties. I mean, it has looked like So there's different styles depending on what the kind of the substrate is.
It's completely dry. This is the reason why it can be kept
preserved
a long time.
No, that.
Okay.
I could see someone trying to get some of these starters and trying to produce a beer in Europe or in America that uses something like this.
Maybe, yeah.
I could see people trying it.
But maybe with Koji.
Yeah, that's true.
Koji. Yeah, I know that many, many experimental brewers try to
that's where you start with, I guess, rather than go straight to Nepal for your. Yeah, the Koji.
That's my brewer. A very good brewer.
Is he?
Also, he experiments a lot of different beers, including a Koji beer. maybe I can stop now.
Okay.
And
how did the turn out? Was it drinkable? Was it very nice?
And the experiment was very conclusive. The beer starter were very active.
Okay. And how old were they?
How was that? Sorry?
How old were they, the starters?
1 year. 1 year and, because I have been in Bhutan and Nepal during the summer, and we start the brew in January, February next the year after. And when I booked the beer starters in Nepal, they were not new.
Okay.
So probably one year old or more.
Okay. So I think it is time to give you a break and let you go. And no one seems to have questions because I think we covered everything in huge detail. I think it was a fascinating tour de force. Thanks a million for this. Just one comment there that I'll show. Paul was just saying, just again, the same as I'm reflecting. Thank you for this and for taking the time. He's in Germany, so he's in Munich. So he said the Berliner Weissigfass was. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to experiment with some stuff. So So there's. So I don't know, Christian. Is there anything? Like I said, you went into such depth; it was so brilliant. Thanks a million. Is there anything you think you want?
Yeah.
That you forgot. Now saying, I forgot, and I should have said something about that.
Yeah, I'm sorry for my English speaking. I'm not really fluent in English, and I know that it's. It's not comfortable for people hearing my poor English.
No, it was very good. It was, I couldn't have, like, you've given so much time. It's incredible. Thanks a million.
Brian, do you plan to share the document?
Yes, the plan on this now is that...
The video... Of the chat, but also the presentation.
If you want,
you can. It's completely free. Just a question.
Okay. Yes. I will. I'll put it up on the thing. And what I'll do is, one second. Here.
Do it as you want.
No, I will. So the plan is
the first. The presentation of I don't.
So this is beerstudies.com. I don't think it's showing up there. Beer-studies.com is your site where you have all the information and more.
Yeah, Brian, in the PDF.
Yes.
At the final page.
Okay.
I have put a lot of link.
I pull that up here.
Link, on beer studies at the last page. You know.
This one.
Voilà, here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so there's
sorted by subject, but here are the diagram I speak about, and also a few comments, and here it's more specifically historical, and so on and so on.
Okay. Yeah. And, so what I'll try and do.
Example of a traditional beer. For example, we spoke about kvass, Russian kvass, but there are also in the world a lot of example of sour beer, traditional sour beer.
Okay.
For example, this is one example.
Oh, in the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
Okay.
Beer which we are called Boza. And it's linked to the Ottoman Empire because you find that kind of beer from Romania to southern Egypt and even Sudan.
Right.
Kind of thing, yeah.
No, there's
about Bouza in Egypt, no?
Vaguely.
yeah, the different kind of Bouza. Bouza made of malt, but also Bouza made from sour medium. Different kind of Bouza. So that's maybe a useful link to people.
Okay, so what I'll do is I'll basically, like, I've been recording this, so in the next week I'll get this up and I'll put it on YouTube and release it as a podcast, and I'll put a link, I'll include this document somewhere. I'm not sure exactly how I'll include the document.
Yeah.
And really encourage anybody to go and check out beerstudies.com. It is, I mean, what you've touched here is only a fraction of what's on your website.
Mm-hmm.
It is for anybody with any sort of interest in brewing or in culture or in history. It's just like you could spend days on it, basically.
Days and years. And so many centuries.
But no, I mean, this has been fantastic. It's covered a whole lot. Maybe some other time when you've had a rest, I can get you to come back and we'll focus on something a little bit more focused so that you won't have to spend 2.5 hours talking.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot.
It's a lot. I didn't think it would go on this long, and I can only thank you again for taking the time. It's just...
No. It's a pleasure for me. Brian, thanks a lot for organizing such a interesting a chat.
Okay, well, thank you. Okay, and that's it. Thanks again to Christian. I think you'll agree it was a tour de force. As you see, I mean, if you look back over this, we actually recorded this as one session. But I just split it up into two because I think it's a big subject, and Christian spent a lot of time on this. So I think that the two sessions work out quite nicely. This is just one of the many sessions we have. We obviously have, you know, I talked to a range of different people about technical things like this, to individual brewers, just about their experience, you know, setting up a brewery, the beer scene, where they are, all of that. And then we have our semi-regular now round tables where we get a couple of brewers together at the same time just to have a chat. So I hope these will all keep coming. I hope you'll subscribe, maybe tell people about it, leave a review, leave a comment. It all helps. I'm enjoying doing them, and I hope you're enjoying watching them. And there'll be plenty more to come.